You're listening to the Leafs Lunch Podcast, Hour 2.
Hour number 2, Leafs Lunch, Jim Taddy subbing for Andy Petrillo. And say hi to everybody watching on TSN 2 and listening on TSN 1050. Very shortly, Jonas Siegel, our good friend from The Athletic, covering the Leafs. TSN 1050 Free Agent Frenzy coverage is presented in part by your Ontario Subaru dealers. So the last signing that we had as we went to the top of the hour, Bernier, 2 years with the Devils and 4.125 per season, 8.250 over the course of the two-year deal. A lot of goalies signed as we knew would happen, and the Leafs got right out in front with Peter Mrazek, 3 years and 3.8 per season. 11.4 is the commitment for the Leafs to Peter Mrazek. Let's bring in Jonas Siegel now, our good friend from The Athletic. Jonas, how are you today, sir?
I am just trying to process everything.
It's crazy. I know. It's you get this sheet of numbers on an email sent to you, and you sift through it. What you can tell is a lot of goalies have signed. Bernier is the most expensive, but when you look at everybody, the term on the contracts, there's only one for six. There's several at four, and the rest are one, two, and three, which tells you that one of the currencies out there is, in fact, the contract term, isn't it?
Yeah, and I mean, I don't love any of these deals, really. Even the Mrazek one, but the question then becomes is like, you may not like it, but would you rather have no one, or would you rather have one of these guys who's like, you know, would you rather have Braden Holtby like for 1 year? Like, so you kind of have to choose. Do you want to commit to one of these guys who you might be like so on, or choose one of these veterans who might not have anything left? Like, there's not, I think the way I'm looking at it with the goaltenders is, there weren't a lot of great options. Mrazek, to me, is kind of a question mark. The length of the deal, I don't love, given his track record. But I don't see a lot of great options out there. This is where I'm at.
Well, yeah, I agree with you. The market is not blessed with a long-term answer. But maybe that's the way this operates while we're under a flat cap is, You take a chance. If it doesn't work, you're not committed, so you can get out of it. And maybe there's a lot of, aside from, as I said to Carlo earlier, the Leafs have a core of eight, four up front, four on the blue line. Everything else is replaceable at this point. So you audition, you try things. If it doesn't work, you move on. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I don't know that you can move on so easily from a goalie. Like, if Mrazek doesn't play well next year, you've got 2 years left at almost $4 million. Like, I'm not sure that there's a lot of teams lining up to make that contract. Maybe there are. I can't see it. That's why the 3 years is kind of, I don't know what to make of it. You know, I would have rather, I mean, Darcy Kemper is a name to me that always made the most sense, aside from like someone like Marc-Andre Fleury, who was going to be a non-starter because of the cap hit. But like, Kemper only had 1 year left at $4.5 million. And I like that idea more because the Leafs could take next season and see what happens. See how Campbell performs, see how Kemper performs, and then both guys would be free agents, and you could kind of decide where you want to go and goal. Here they're committing to Peter Mrazek for 3 years, and I don't know what they're going to get. And that's kind of what's not great about this is you're kind of betting your goaltending on Peter Mrazek and Jack Campbell. And really, to me, it kind of feels like Campbell probably has to be your guy, but who knows? Who knows what's going to happen with him next year?
Yeah, I agree with everything you're saying there. It's a little precarious in terms of term, but I just feel that, you know, even when we get to the wingers, whatever the Leafs do, it's you need flexibility because they've given the flexibility away with certainly the four forwards. So anytime you can get in and out, it's a good thing. But the 3 years for a goalie that you don't know is a commitment, and that may be a problem or not. But like many of the things that the Leafs are looking at here, we won't know until it happens.
Yeah, well, the problem for them is they're probably going to get priced out. And now with Mrazek, they don't have a lot of space. And obviously they signed Michael Bunting. And I like the Bunting signing. Like, to me, that one makes a lot of sense for a lot of different reasons. But this is the choice you make when you decide to stick with your core. Like, I understand everything that they've said, about those four guys and believing in them and sticking with them. But there are prices to pay when you decide to go that route. Like, I didn't understand why they wouldn't have, or why they didn't choose to like look around with those guys in the offseason. Now, we're not talking about Matthews, obviously, and we're not talking about Tavares, you're talking about Nylander and Marner, and you're talking about potentially moving one. Like, I never understood why you wouldn't just explore. And maybe you don't come up with anything that works, but that when they signed those contracts, Jim, like, it was, they weren't expecting the cap to stay flat. So in light of the current conditions with the salary cap, in light of some of the playoff stuff, it made sense to me to at least look at it. And they chose not to look at it. And the choice means you don't have a lot to spend in free agency. You have to let Zach Hyman go. You can't really spend that much elsewhere on the roster because you just don't have the space. And so that's kind of the cost of the approach that they're taking.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think moving forward, because the window of tolerance, I guess is the way I'm going to say it, the window of tolerance for a stumble out of this team gets slimmer by the second. And so if it doesn't start well, you have to be prepared that because the economics have changed, just like any other business, you know, deals were set up under a certain economic situation, and now that's gone. So you have to have plan B lined up, and you know, if things don't work out, what are you going to do? Well, you have to re-examine your commitment to the top four. I don't think there's any question about that.
Apparently they do not agree, because obviously they decided right after the season that they believe in those guys. And listen, like, they could still be right. Like, I know right now it's not great for management in terms of the public perception, but there's a very... like, it's a strong possibility that next year they have a really good regular season. They win a couple rounds. Maybe even they go deeper than that. Like, that's not really, that wouldn't be a surprise. So it's not like a crazy bet they're making, but it carries, you know, holes and risks. And we saw that last year. Like, they can say, you know, our captain was out for all but six games of the series and he played 2 minutes in game one. But that's part of the risk. Like, when you're so top heavy and one player and one of those top players goes out, like, you just don't have a lot of great players left over to fill in because you're committing so much to those four guys. So it's a risky strategy. I think it can work, but it's certainly got some holes and risk and all that stuff packed within it.
It's a gamble. I think that's the best way to describe it. So let me ask you this, because there is that premise that, you know, if you were the most optimistic Leaf fan, you would come up with a scenario whereby they might get pretty deep or win a cup. But what is acceptable? What would be a successful season for the Leafs in your mind next year?
Well, I'm of the opinion that, like, unless they're winning the cup, the season is not a success. Because, like, these are cup years. Like, they only have Nylander and Matthews under contract for three more seasons. So to me, any season they don't win a cup right now is not a success. I don't know if I'd say it's a failure, but it's not a success. So, like, to me, at least if you win a round, you kind of get this massive monkey off your back. So, like, that's, if they just won one round, is that a successful season? I guess. I don't really think so, but it would clear a lot of the consternation, I guess, around the team right now. And I mean, to me, that's probably the minimum for them. And if they can go beyond that, then I think the vision that they have, the Leafs have for their team, gets a little bit more credibility. Because right now, the credibility isn't there because they just haven't done it.
Yeah, you know, so if you got into the second round and went out, or even in the third round, then you have a list of deficiencies, which would be painful because you wouldn't have the money to solve them. I mean, this is an all-or-nothing premise, isn't it?
Yeah, but I, at that point, you know, the roster, who knows what the roster will look like at that point. Like, this is another part of the way that they've gone. Like, you need to be able to draft really well, and that hasn't happened to this point. And to be fair to Kyle Dubas, like, he's been the GM 3 years. It's, you can't really expect his drafts to be paying off at this point, but this dates back to 2014 when Brendan Shanahan became president. So they haven't drafted well enough. That would help them a lot because it would be cheap contracts, young players playing for nothing. And then the other thing is, like, you need to really hit on free agency, and you don't have a lot of money to do it. So you have to find, like, these value buys. And maybe Michael Bunting is one. Like, he fits the profile of someone who could outplay his contract. Like, they tried last year with Jimmy Vesey. They tried with Travis Boyd. Those didn't work out. That's the kind of player you're talking about, because you just don't have the money to compete. And that's the system that they've chosen. And can it work? Yeah. But it requires you kind of hitting the dartboard quite a few times.
Yeah, agreed. And you know, for me, it's a return to a game that I don't like, and it's called The Next Guy Who Walks in the Door is going to be the final piece to the puzzle, and I don't agree with that at all. I think, you know, it's nice to have people walk through the door that are going to contribute, but it's on the core for me. How about you?
Yeah, of course. I mean, that's why they're paid the way they are. And it's funny, they've taken, obviously, a tremendous amount of heat. I don't know that they just didn't produce. I mean, for a big chunk of that series, even though they weren't putting points on the board, that top line is pretty good. But, like, it's results. Like, you need results. And for next year, they need those guys to be great, especially with the fact that they're going to lose, that they've lost Zach Hyman. They need their best players in the playoffs to be their best players and to produce. And I don't think it's crazy to think that that's going to happen. Like, I know it doesn't feel that way given the way these last couple playoffs have gone, but it can change really quickly. Like, your reputation can be one thing one year and completely change another. Like, we just saw it in the NBA, Giannis Antetokounmpo and the Bucks. Like,
right.
They were known for not getting it done in the playoffs and coming short, and Giannis having all these questions. And then one playoff happens, Giannis goes to another level, they win a championship, and all that stuff is gone. So that can happen with the Leafs. I think it's important to remember that.
Oh, I agree with you. I think, you know, if the Leafs were to win a Stanley Cup, people would then predict dynasty, and then there'd be a small group that would argue, why didn't they sweep the Stanley Cup final? I mean, that's how volatile the fan base can be. So let's talk about Bunting. He's the ad up front and well-respected, and I think everybody understands the fit, and that leaves him with about 4.6 to spend on another winger or two. What do you think they're up to?
Well, the question is, like, what can they afford and who can they afford? And I would have liked, and maybe it'll come through. Like, I think they need another center. So whether that's like a fourth line guy like Derek Ryan, he doesn't really solve the center spot that I'm looking at. Like, I think, you know, Alex Kerfoot is better on the wing. But they just might not have the money. Like, look at some of these contracts that are being handed out. Like, they just can't really compete with most of that. So they need to find guys like Bunting and take chances and try to find value. And you know what, Jim? Like, we forget this every offseason. What their roster looks like on the first day of camp is not necessarily what their roster is going to look like
right
in game one of the playoffs. So if they come to find that they're not strong enough still in that third-line center spot, for instance, they can go and trade for a third-line center. And that's not easy, obviously. We saw last year how those things can kind of go awry, but it's not like you're locked into the roster. So we'll see. But the way that they're structured now, obviously they need their best players to be even better, probably.
So you mentioned Derek Ryan, and as you said that, I have a note here from Ryan Rashog saying the Oilers have touched base with Derek Ryan on a possible, looks like a three-year thing with an option. Wow.
Seriously.
Yeah, so I don't know how true that is.
That is a long commitment. I think he's like 35.
34, yeah.
Okay.
Crazy. But, you know, that's if they decide he's the missing piece, guess what? That's what the market does, right? So they're probably not going to pay him a lot, but they're going to give him term, which is what Bogosian got with Tampa.
Yeah, and those are no-goes. Like, Bogosian was a different case, and they want to replace his contributions and his role. It's just like you look out there and you look at all the options. There's just not a lot of options, and the ones that are out there, like Ian Cole was a guy who I thought made a lot of sense, but he's probably going to get $3 million if the contract hasn't been announced already. Like, he's going to get way more than they can afford. And again, this is what you kind of sign up for, and this is what you didn't sign up for. Like, they didn't sign up for the cap to be flat, but they sign up for the fact that they're going to stick with their core, and the ramifications are you just don't have a lot elsewhere to spend.
Yeah, I mean, no matter what we say here, I mean, the Leafs are going to add another forward or two. How it fits in, is they're going to figure that out. But moving forward, I mean, it seems to me the goalie tandem is something that develops over the course of the year, and the left side on the forward unit develops over the course of the year. Would you agree with that?
The forward group?
Yeah, the left side and the forward group is sort of wide open as we speak right now. So this is going to be, I'm going to call it an open audition. You've got people like Robertson and maybe Joey Anderson that get looks. I mean, this is not, you're not going to break camp and say, this is the left winger on the left side of Matthews and Marner.
I mean, who knows? Like, yeah. We're still so early into all this. Like, obviously, free agency is one path to changing the roster. They can always make trades. Like, they may decide to trade for a left winger. Obviously, one of the guys, you know, that they looked at last year and had some success with was Alex Galchenyuk. But all these guys, like Galchenyuk is one. Like, he comes with serious question marks. And obviously, if they wanted to sign him, he probably would have been signed. And maybe they're taking the approach, like, we'll look around, see what we can find in free agency, and circle back to him if it doesn't work out. It's just, it's hard. Like, you go back to the offseason before, like, they trade Andreas Johnsson and Kasperi Kapanen to clear some space and fix a hole on defense. And then what happens? Suddenly your forward group isn't as deep as you like. Like, it's just a balancing act under the cap. And so their defense is in a better place than it has been. And now their forward group has some questions. But again, it comes back to those four guys. If they're good enough, like, you should be able to stick, I don't know, $1 million player next to Matthews and next to Hyman, and the line should still be maybe not as good, but still pretty dangerous. And I think that's probably where they're at this point.
Jonas, appreciate your time. Thanks very much.
My pleasure. Thanks, Jim.
Jonas Siegel from The Athletic, covering the Leafs, of course. And yeah, it's a work in progress. You have to be patient, but I don't know if this is the time to be patient. I know it's a little contradictory, but it's kind of a weird situation. Since we spoke at the top of the hour, Bernier, these are all confirmed deals now. So Zach Hyman's deal has been added to the list, and also Nate Thompson, 1 year at $800,000 with Philadelphia, and Tucker Poolman, 4 years at $2.5 apiece, defenseman with Vancouver. So Zach is confirmed at 7 years at $5.5, $38.5 million. And this means that in 70 minutes of the free agent frenzy, $230,100,000 have been spent by NHL teams so far. This is Leafs Lunch. Glad you're with us on TSN 1050 and TSN 2.
Now, back to Leafs Lunch.
Welcome back. Free agent frenzy continues. Jim Taddy subbing for Andy Petrillo. And going to bring in now from TSN 1260 in Edmonton, host of the Jason Gregor Show, Jason Gregor. Jason, how are you today, sir?
Jim, I'm doing well. It's amazing how many contracts will get signed in 45 minutes. Crazy.
Well,
crazy.
The Hyman
no
one, I mean.
No tampering, Jim. No tampering at all. None of those conversations.
I think the paper's already yellowing on the Hyman deal, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, that was one, though, that one actually wasn't tampering because they actually had permission to talk to him. It's kind of the running gag for me that, people always complain and they suggest there isn't any tampering. I'm like, well, you got millions of dollars, totals of billions of dollars, and they're all done in 45 minutes. Like, I don't buy it.
No, I'm with you on that. So take us through. The Oilers added, a couple of forwards, a couple of defensemen, made a trade?
Yeah, it's been a pretty big offseason. If you look at Edmonton today from where they were at the end of the season, so Larson, Bear, and Kulikov are out on the back end. They will bring in now CeCe and Evan Bouchard, who obviously didn't play in the playoffs, and Duncan Keith are in. And then you have Cahoon and Neal are out up front, and Fogle and Hyman are in up front. So clearly the left wingers are better in Hyman and Fogle. I don't think there's much debate on that. On the back end, there's a big risk for sure in Duncan Keith. Like, the question is going to be, was Duncan Keith's last two seasons a reflection of playing with rookie defensemen on one of the worst defensive teams in the league, or was it him because he's getting older? And we probably won't find out the answer to that until the season begins.
You know, it is kind of funny that even with a flat cap, you still, and the Leafs have their own version of this, have to take a gamble on a $5.5 million hockey player in Duncan Keith, but that's the nature of the beast, isn't it?
Yeah, well, his cap space, he's getting paid, pretty well, I guess, it's 2.1, but yeah, in the NHL, cap hits what matters, and, obviously the Oilers are betting that Duncan Keith, and I'm assuming, based on the signing today, that he'll probably start the season with Cody CeCe, that with a veteran player, and CeCe's last two seasons analytically and stuff in Toronto actually weren't that bad overall. They're actually pretty decent, but neither one of those guys I think is an Adam Larson defensively, and so that there's going to be some concerns. And I think where Edmonton's hoping to play better defense is simply by not having to spend as much time in their own zone. And, they're hoping to have a better bottom six. Zach Hyman should even help them I think Toronto fans can see what he can help your team 5-on-5 when he's healthy. That's obviously a concern. The length of his contract is obviously a massive concern in Edmonton. But I'll say this, Jim. I believe Edmonton has a four-year. They're looking at 4 years, and that they've got to be a team that, now they've made the playoffs 2 years in a row. They haven't won a series, but they made the playoffs 2 years in a row. That's the first time in 20 years. So that's check mark positive for Ken Holland's regime. But now it's, they got to win a round. I believe, honestly, they got to win at least one playoff round in three of the next four seasons if they have any hope of wanting to keep Leon Draisaitl, who's the first one to need to be renewed, and then the year after it's McDavid and possibly Darnell Nurse, who's on the verge of signing a four-year contract. So I think they got a four-year window to convince their best players that this team could be a competitive team year in and year out and be a legit cup contender, which they've yet to be.
There was some talk about something to do with goaltending, but they didn't do anything so far. Is there anything in the wind?
Well, you know, the Darcy Kemper rumors keep circling around. Arizona's, but the problem with that is that Edmonton just doesn't have a ton of assets to give up, and you can't trade Koskinen for Kemper because the cap hits are identical, right? So you're going to have to add something more to do that. And then it's probably got to be something significant because Arizona, like, you look at, you know, they took on Shane Gostisbehere, but they got a second and a seventh round pick, right? So, and that was just for the money. So if they're not saving, I guess they're not saving any, they're not wasting any money because Kemper and Koskinen are all the same. But, that's about the only one. I think, you know, they might have to bite the bullet and just go with the two goaltenders that they had last year, which is obviously a risk. There's no question about it. It's a risk. You know, I'm not sure Mike Smith's going to have a .923 save percentage. Like, you know, he had his second best season of his career last year. He's in good shape, and I think he could be a .915 to .917 save percentage goalie, which is still, you know, 12th to 14th compared to last year's goalie. So it wouldn't be awful, but you're betting on a lot to think he's going to, you know, have as good of a season statistically as he did last year.
So it looks like the Oilers have about 2.4 left to spend. Are they going to spend it, or are they done?
Oh no, I think they definitely need a third line center. There's no question. You know, I think Derek Ryan's an option. You know, Nick Bonino. I think of all the signings today, one of the signings I like the best is Bonino in San Jose. $2 million for $2 million. That guy produces points for you consistently in any team he's played for. 5-on-5. I really like that signing. But, that was a guy I think they would have liked to get. His wife is from the Edmonton area, but it didn't happen. There was the pipe dream of Ryan Getzlaff, but he ultimately stayed in Anaheim. So they need a third-line center. Now, the other option, Jim, is they could surprise some people and sign another winger and then move Nugent Hopkins to third-line center and have some depth down, some legit depth down the middle. But I'm not sure that's going to happen just yet. So, they'll probably sign, Derek Ryan on a one-year deal. I could see he's a right shot center, which is what they need. You know, he can win some face-offs, which is obviously what they need. And he can produce points 5-on-5. So I think he would be an option. I think he's a one-year guy who probably wouldn't cost you a whole bunch. I think there's a legit possibility there. And then Ryan McLeod, as the season progresses, could go. Now, you mentioned 2.5. I would say Edmonton really has an extra $4.1 million, Jim, because Oscar Klefbom isn't playing this year. He's going to go to LTI. So that would free up. So they do have more than two. I'd say they got close to like 6.5.
In terms of the lengthy list of the other signings, what do you make? What jumps off the page for you?
Well, kind of like you, Jim. You know, I'm a little surprised by some of the Granlund signing in Nashville. I'm kind of like, what? So that one's a little bit of a head scratcher to me. He's been in decline for a few years, and for the most part, offense goes to die for whatever reason for players in Nashville. So that one's a little surprising to me. Dougie Hamilton in New Jersey, good for him to get all the money, but. Like, I don't know, maybe I'm reading the tea leaves wrong about the New Jersey Devils, but I don't, there's a guy who I think just took the money, which is fine, but, I'm not sure they're going to be, that competitive. I'm kind of intrigued to see what Boston does because, they've still got a lot of cap space and they got a lot of openings. Like, I'm guessing they're going to re-sign David Krejci. It's just that, it'll eventually happen. But, the other one was Coleman in Calgary.
Right.
Blake Coleman, I know he had back-to-back 20-goal seasons in New Jersey before he went to Tampa, so he was in a lower role. So Calgary's obviously betting that he can be the Blake Coleman of where, he's a 20-goal scorer, and if he is, that helps him. I'm still kind of waiting to see if Calgary, changes up some things or if they're just going to stick. I will say that Zadorov for a third-rounder, I like that trade for Calgary. You didn't give up very much. Big physical defenseman, and as the playoffs have shown us, Jim, you need size and skill on your back end to compete in today's NHL in the postseason.
Yeah, totally agree with that. I find it interesting, and I said earlier about Duncan Keith's salary, and you have to hope. I mean, really, when you look at the Leafs and a lot of the other teams, there's the core players, and then there's these guys you're bringing in to support them, and everybody has their own version of that, but there's a lot of question marks on a lot of teams.
Oh, 100%. Like, there's very few Tampa Bay's, right?
Yeah.
Or Colorado. Most teams are going to have some question marks in certain areas, right? Like, I'm sure that the main question in Toronto is what are they going to do in goal, right? Like, how good is their goaltending going to be? That's going to be their question. I know some people, I think for maybe the next year or two, they wonder, hey, how do you replace Hyman? But you still got Marner, Matthews, Tavares. Like, they've got the big three. They're going to produce offense. I don't think that's a big concern in Toronto. To me, it's more so, going to be in their defensive zone. Can they improve there? Montreal, to me, can Montreal even make the playoffs? With I know they went to the Cup final, but you got Toronto to compete against, and Boston, and Tampa, and a really good Florida team. Like, don't sleep on the Panthers. I like that team a lot, actually, heading into the next season. So, Montreal, like, what if they lose Deneau? What if they lose Deneau? And they don't have Shea Weber?
Pretty good bet.
Like, I know they got, they signed David Savard, who's basically going to replace Weber, and he's not as good as Weber. So, I think there's lots of teams that have question marks for sure. Like, the one advantage that Edmonton has is their division isn't great. So after Vegas, I think Edmonton could easily be considered the second best team. Now, Vancouver's improved a lot this year. I know they got concerns long term with Oliver Ekman-Larsson, but they've improved their skill on their team significantly with acquiring him and Garland for sure. So, I think Vancouver's going to be better. Calgary, I like Blake Coleman. I think the long-term deal on that, there's some risk in that for sure, right? Like, he's the poster boy for 2016 potentially, right? But at least his deal did come under $5 million. So if the cap goes up, it won't crush you like Okposo and Ladd and those guys. But, I think it's kind of wide open in the Pacific. And that's the one advantage that Edmonton has is that, they're not going into a hornet's nest in their division. There's Vegas, and then it's wide open.
So this may be rubbing salt in the wound, but with Zach Hyman signing at Edmonton, how is that playing out there?
Mixed reviews amongst fans. I think people, they see the positive side of Zach Hyman, but then they also see a seven-year term that's basically bio-proof if you look at the signing bonuses in the last 3 years. And, there are some concerns. The style of game that Hyman plays, is he going to wear down even more? Like, I think that one's definitely got question marks long term. But like I said, I think people are hoping that basically, and I think the organization has basically said it without saying it, they got a 4-year window. They feel, hey, Zach Hyman for 4 years should be able to help us. Maybe at the end of it, the cap goes up significantly, like they're all expecting it to go up in a few years. Then maybe it's not as much of a drain on your overall cap. But hey, if the Oilers don't get things turned around and are going a few rounds deep in the playoffs every year, well, then they're going to have $21 million freed up. Now, that's 4 years away, so don't people freak out and suggest it's 4 years, right? McDavid and Drysdale are going to ask for a trade before that. I've been on record as saying that all along. It's the most loser mentality. I don't believe they'll have a loser mentality. They want to win. They want to be competitive, and they're obviously a main part of it. But if they don't have success and then you're a free agent, well, that changes things, right? When you have the opportunity to go where you want. So that's why I think there's 4 years. Edmonton's got 4 years, which is a long time. Lots can change in 4 years, but they got to have some playoff success.
Yeah, I mean, that's, when you look at the free agent list of all the people that have signed, the thing that jumps off the page, 1, 2, and 3 years, there's a bunch at 4. Zach is at 7. There's Coleman at 6. But, I like the flexibility. It's hard to make that kind of a commitment. 7 years is an eternity, really.
Oh, yeah, Dougie Hamilton got it, but, there's not many. First of all, and I've said this, if the NHL and the NHLPA would take a step back, even the PA, and look and say, what's best for our league, what's best for our players? If they capped UFA contracts, once you're past the age of 27, I don't care who you are, if you max it out at 5-year term, it's better for everybody because there's going to be less wasted money on buyouts. Right? And players who are playing good, they're going to get their money again anyway. Right? Like, look at the NBA. Now, their best players play the most minutes, no question. But they don't sign, they're signing 2-3 year deals. Sure, there's some changes. But if you all of a sudden only had 7 years, 5-year deals, Zach Hyman's still going to get good money on 5 years. And, you know what? It's better for the overall collective of the PA to realize there wouldn't be as much wasted dead cap space as there is every year from players who aren't playing anymore. So I don't think they'll ever do it, but they would be wise. It would make the league better overall to have a max term of 5 years once you hit free agency age.
Luke Shen going to Vancouver, 2 years, $850 a season. You know, I've said this before, the signing or losing a player, regardless of, you know, and Zach Hyman's a good example, where we would say it's got nothing to do with him. It's the hit on the cap, and the commitment is, oh, we signed him. Oh, we went. Like, you're not happy either way because you don't know how it plays out.
Well, yeah, if I had a crystal ball, now I can play the odds a little bit, Jim, and history will tell me that most players, when they're 25, unless you're elite, right? Unless you're elite, those long-term contracts come back to bite you, right? Like outside of Sedano, like if you even look at big free agent signings, Sedano Char in 2006, that worked out. They won a cup in 2011. Marian Hossa went to a very good Chicago team, kind of the final piece. That one worked out. Now that was under the old cheating rules of 12-year deal, but still. You know what, even if it was only eight, it would have worked out. The only other one I say that really worked on a longer deal was Matt Niskanen in Washington. Because, right. You know, he signed a five-year deal. Even Brooks Orpik, I guess they both signed. But, Orpik got bought out, right after they won the Cup. Right, he had 1 year left. He was kind of hanging on, but they still got him. But Matt Niskanen was a legit top four guy for your team. Most of the big free agent signings do not help the team. If the main goal is to win a Cup, it's not the main one. And it's funny because if you look at the Stanley Cup champs over the last decade, how many of them are big-time players in free agency? Not many, right? Like Niskanen in Washington, but that's it. Yet teams do it all the time. I guess it's the only way they feel they can improve, but they'd be much better to go on short-term deals. Short-term deals, you got a better odds of that player giving you close to good value on that return. And, you know, there are less, but like, you know, you look at Coleman and you look at Barkley Goodrow, they both got 6 years, right? They got long-term deals. Now, they were legit good players on those cup-winning teams, no question, but as third-line guys. So if now you ask Blake Coleman to be a second-line player, well, that's good, but it means your team isn't as good because now he's in a second-line role, right? Like, he was an excellent third-line player, but he's not a second-line player on a cup-winning team, and now he's going to be in Calgary as a second-line player.
Crazy stuff. You know, it's a spin the wheel and see what works. And of course, there's only one team that wins the Cup, so there's a lot of disappointment. Jason, thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Jim, enjoy it.
I will. Thank you. Jason Greger, TSN 1260 Edmonton, host of The Jason Greger Show. So just to recap the Leafs, and let me just point out that Kevin Weeks at the NHL Network is tweeting out that signs pointing to the Seattle Kraken making some traction on Grubauer. So this is the wild card is, you know, Seattle didn't, they drafted a lot of assets, but not a starting roster. I mean, there's some good players there, but you can actually, project some people being moved out of there. And of course, they've got cap space, which could drive the market up. And so they're going to sign people. And actually, you know, there's a bunch of teams that have 20 plus million to spend if they want to go to the ceiling. So that's the wild card that we haven't seen played so far. What we have seen is Michael Bunting signed, the winger signed by the Leafs, and Dave Poulin talked on the free agent frenzy coverage on the TV side about Michael Bunting and what he brings to the table. Let's listen in.
Front. And this just has to be depth. I mean, they know him. He played for both Kyle Dubas and Sheldon Keefe in the Sioux, so they know the player, and he had a big scoring year in June. He hasn't scored in the American Hockey League even. He had 20 goals once, a little bit over 20 goals once. And so they're just hoping that a really late bloomer, he'll be 26 years old in September. He caught lightning in a bottle last year for 21 games in Arizona, a team that didn't make the playoffs, wasn't able to crack their lineup, and that hasn't been an overly powerful team for the 6 years he's been a pro. So, you know, it's just a hope that a familiarity, a comfort will continue what he started last year in the National Hockey League at the age of 25.
Well, we'll see. A nice audition. And as I've said many times, you get the impression without knowing, you know, what the Leafs do next, that there's a sort of an audition on the left side. If we go with the roster that they have right now, there's a lot of pieces there. And we've been told that they're trying to find a center winger. So I don't know exactly where Kerfoot slots into that. But you get the idea that if you take those top two lines, Matthews and Marner and Tavares and Nylander, that you may see with two left wing spots open, probably four guys over the course of the next until the trade deadline, auditioning there, and they'll see what works. This is an ongoing thing, much like the Tannen. Peter Mrazek signed with the Leafs early in the process here, 3 years, 11.4, 3.8 per season. So the goaltending tandem is something that projects forward. We'll see how it works. We don't know right now. We don't know what happens on the left side. We'll see how that works. That's where they're at. And, you know, there's still plenty more to come along here. We're going to also check out the Winnipeg Jets, who made some moves. Sarah Oleski will stop by next. This is Leafs Lunch. Glad you're with us on TSN 1050 and TSN 2.
Now, back to Leafs Lunch.
Welcome back. Final segment, Leafs Lunch. TSN 1050 Free Agent Frenzy coverage is presented in part by your Ontario Subaru dealers. And going to have Sarah Oleski, our TSN Winnipeg Jets reporter, on very shortly. I can update a few things. Senators have agreed to terms with defenseman Michael Delzato. 2-year contract. $2 million average per season. Ian Cole, 2.9 for 1 year with Carolina. Carter Hutton, Arizona, 1 year, $750. Levo, deal with Carolina as well. And just let me scroll down the page here and figure out what's happening there. So Levo is, we don't have a term on that? No. What else do we have? That's the latest. So that's what's going on there. The Winnipeg situation is interesting because they don't have a backup goaltender, but we'll explore that. Derek Ryan, I just want to correct something I said earlier because I'm reading this as we speak. So Edmonton looking at Derek Ryan as a possible third-line center option. So 1 year, maybe, for the 34-year-old. We'll get into that later on. Let's bring in Sarah Oleski, Winnipeg Jets reporter for TSN. Sarah, welcome. How are you today?
I'm doing great, thanks. How are you doing today, Jim? I'm
good. It's a little hectic, as you can understand. Just, I mean, some of these deals, I love the sort of the frugalness with the term, except for a couple of the big guys like Dougie Hamilton, 7 years and $60 million in New Jersey. I'm fascinated by the goaltending market just because the Jets need one.
They do, but you know what? I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if they signed Eric Comrie, who has spent a number of years in the organization. Every time he seems to be put on waivers, if the Jets have put on waivers, he has made his way back as well. So they're a big fan of Eric Comrie as a person, and he spent a lot of time down in the AHL with the Manitoba Moose. But I think that it's very possible that we see him start as the backup to Connor Hellebuyck. Know that with the players that they have brought in addition to the restricted free agents that the Winnipeg Jets still have to sign in Andrew Kopp, Neil Pionk, and Logan Stanley, there isn't a lot of money for a backup, and so it is possible that we see Eric Comrie get the nod, at least to start the season.
Sarah, what's your sense of the blue line? I mean, this is not the first time they've had to do some quick surgery back there, and they did it, and I think they did a nice job. How about you?
Jim, I think this is the best job that they've done since they've had to make the changes after the 2018 season. You look at the departures that they had. They went from having so much depth, particularly on the right side, to the blue line became the greatest area of weakness for this team over the last couple of seasons. And it seemed that every trade deadline, free agency, or camp, it always circled back to the blue line and whether or not Kevin Cheveldayoff would be able to improve it. And he hadn't been able to up to this point to any great degree. He had brought in veterans, he'd brought in depth players that were, you know, perhaps playing a little bit above where they would typically be slotted in. And so that was always the focus. But the job that he's been able to do of bringing in Brendan Dillon as well as Nate Schmidt with term as well, you look at the top four and it's a completely different looking, in my mind, top four now compared to what we saw when they were swept by the Montreal Canadiens.
Up front, you have 7.7 to spend, but you detailed the three RFAs, Kopp mm-hmm. up front and then Stanley and Pionk. They have to add somebody there though, right?
I would think so, and so I'll be interested to see. I know they're looking to add some depth there, particularly on the right side. They don't have a ton of depth when you look at the organization that are ready to play in the NHL on right wing. So you've got Blake Wheeler, you have Nikolaj Ehlers, but then when you look at that third and fourth line, there isn't really anyone right now. There has been some talk about whether or not Christian Vesalainen, who had spent most of his career playing with the Manitoba Moose, whether or not he would be able to switch over and play on the right side. But they would like to add somebody else there. And Paul Maurice likes veteran players, in particular for his fourth line. He doesn't like to have to worry about them. He likes them to be penalty killers, and I think that they would ideally like to add a low-cost veteran there, somebody that's, you know, low maintenance and that they can pretty much put out in the situations. Because last year, in particular, they had Trevor Lewis on the right side and Nate Thompson at center. And I think that that was a combination that Paul thought had some merit to it for sure in the way that he was able to utilize them. And I think they'd like to find something in that same sort of vein this year, is that particularly on right wing.
You know, it's interesting, and the Leafs' configuration is slightly different than everybody else's because it's four up front and four in the blue line, and the money.
I've never heard about that, Jim.
I mean, it's on buses in Winnipeg, isn't it? I mean, come on. But having said that, I mean, everybody has their core, and they're looking for support players, and sometimes it's guys on really short-term veteran guys. You're talking about those fourth liners mm-hmm. that Coach Maurice likes. I mean, they're vital, but you have to sort of wait for them to show up. But when you deal with the Winnipeg core up front, is everybody happy with it? And where does this, how does this move forward, do you think?
I mean, by and large, but he is, when you look at the top six, and I think it was a strong move to bring Paul Stastny back as well because of the options that he gives you to play both on the wing, or last year we saw when Pierre-Luc Dubois struggled at times that you would have Stastny move back into the middle, and it was just another really good option for them. But they have the core up front. It was the blue line that they really needed, and obviously it was Connor Hellebuyck in net. So I think this is a much deeper team than what we saw before, at least on paper. And this, it always seems free agency and trade deadline, Kevin Cheveldayoff takes a lot of heat in this market for not being able to add enough and improve enough in the minds often of fans. And that this year has been the best job that he has done in that department in terms of improving it. Again, on paper, we'll see how it all turns out, but certainly like the moves, and I think that the Winnipeg Jets are a stronger team right now than what they were this past season.
Just as an overview, what's your take on what everybody else in Canada did today?
Interesting to see some of the contracts that were given out, and I look at some, I mean, you know, just even keeping an eye on some of the players that were in the Winnipeg Jets organization the last few years, like a Tucker Pullman with looking at signing in Vancouver and the substantial raise in term that he got as well. But, you know, it shows you just sometimes, you know, how desperate everybody can be to have someone on that right side for D. But I think that it's interesting to see. I think it's interesting to see the moves that everybody has made, or in turn, some of the moves that teams haven't made up to this point. It'll be interesting to see what sort of depth signings we see going forward or trades. So even though there's been a lot of movement on this first day, I think that some of the most interesting moves could still be to come.
Sarah, I really appreciate you stopping by. Thanks very much.
Anytime. Great to speak to you.
Great to speak with you, too. Sarah Leske, TSN Winnipeg Jets reporter, giving us a lowdown on the Jets. And as she said, likely to go with Comrie as the backup. There's a lot of situations where you'd like to solve it today, and we're not even 2 hours into the free agent frenzy. But there's a lot of things that can happen before training camp. And then, of course, there's the regular season and waivers and things like that. And, you know, I've talked about the Leafs having a couple of situations that will develop over the course of the season. Remember, the Stanley Cup is now going to be handed out in June when we get back to normalcy. So no need to win it in December, but you know, you'd like to feel, I guess, comfortable going into the season, but that doesn't always work for the Stanley Cup winner. It's sort of something that develops over the course of the year. We were talking about the Leafs goaltending tandem, so that's set in stone. Jack Campbell, on the last year of his contract, will be teamed with Peter Mrazek, who's entering the first of 3 years at 3.8, total hit of 11.4, which leaves the Leafs with 4.6 to spend on a winger or two, or perhaps a depth defenseman. I'll get into that depth defenseman in a minute, but before we do that, let's hear Jamie McLennan's take on the Leafs goaltending situation.
Just based on, if you're looking Mrazek for Frederik Andersen, I think they're weaker, because I think Frederik Andersen's a better goaltender than Peter Mrazek. But ultimately, change was needed. So you're going from the traditional starter and backup, which you had in Andersen and Campbell, and you're going to a tandem. And now the net's wide open. Campbell had a fantastic season last year. Can he follow that up? Now that net being wide open, Mrazek and him are going to battle for ice time, so it'll be interesting to see how that unfolds.
Okay, so as we're doing that, of course, you see me go to the phone pretty well on a regular basis, and it's just because the Pierre LeBrun has just tweeted out, it looks like Seattle will scoop Grubauer for 6 years if it gets finalized, so that's what's at stake there. So, I mean, you forget about Seattle because they're new, but they can drive the price up. There's a lot of teams that haven't participated much in the free agent frenzy that have a lot of cap space. We're talking about the lower teams. And then, of course, there's the Jack Eichel thing in Buffalo that'll take a back seat today. But that's where we stand with about a minute left of coverage here. And, of course, if you're listening on TSN 1050, the coverage will continue. Matt Cause will be by with Game Day, followed by Overdrive with Brian Hayes and Jamie McLennan. And, of course, at all the TSN channels, there's that free agent frenzy that's happening live as we mumble into the final break. So the Leafs situation, maybe they add a depth defenseman, and maybe they don't. Maybe they take a longer look at Sandin and Liljegren, and you know, you'd like to be able to say that Sandin can take the next step, and you know, where do they have him projected over the course of the next 2 to 3 years, and what do they do with Morgan Riley entering the final year of his contract? So no shortage of questions and question marks with the Maple Leafs as they led out of the goaltending race with Peter Mrazek, and that's a nice signing. Whether or not it's a good tandem, well, that has to be determined by the games being played as well. So just on the way out, let me tell you that TSN 1050 Free Agent Frenzy coverage is presented in part by your Ontario Subaru dealers. Thanks for stopping by on TSN 1050 and TSN 2.